At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Outside of Work, where we explore who we truly are beyond our job titles. Today's going to be a bit of a different episode. You see, I'm in my comfy little chair. I got my pillows behind me if you're watching on YouTube, you know, because I'm old and my back hurts, so got to support that. But no, today's going to be more of a solo episode. I'm going to give you guys an update, on how life has been since being laid off. The roller coaster, if you will, that I never expected. I'll answer a question that was sent in by one of you guys, Laura Kubicki. Thank you so much for sending in your question. I'm going to answer that for you all. And then, you know, maybe try to give some tips. I don't know if you would consider them tips, maybe just more like open discussion, raw truth that I'm going to send your way. And then we'll end with some comments, mainly from YouTube, from people who've been following along with the shows and the episodes. Let's do this. So first, life after getting laid off in the past 5 or 6 months has been a roller coaster, to say the least. Since then, there have been way more layoffs. Volkswagen, UPS, recently Paramount. So, you know, my fellow media folks, they got let go. Tech industry, video game industry, everyone is feeling the brunt of these layoffs. There's just the, you know, economy that we're in right now, unfortunately. And so it's not so unique to any one industry, but it is affecting us all. And it can almost feel like, you know, in this search for a job after getting laid off, it's like, how am I possibly going to get a job if there's no assurance that I can, you know, keep a job and there's no assurance that I can get a job? And so you're kind of in this weird limbo, trying to figure out what do I do? I mean, at least for me, that's how it's felt. It's kind of been like, do I switch industries? Do I continue, you know, going after the same industry? You don't really know. So no one group is really being, you know, targeted, but the feeling and the effect is so widespread. It's a lot. That leads me into Laura's question that she submitted in. How did getting laid off affect your self-esteem, and how did you move forward mentally/emotionally? That's a great question. How have I been moving forward mentally, emotionally? First and foremost, I will have to say layoffs are heartbreaking. Mentally, it makes you feel as if you did something wrong, that you're unworthy of something, that you failed in some aspects, at least for me as a high achiever, that's how I felt. And so it can be really heartbreaking and detrimental to your mental health. And then subsequently, emotionally, you'll feel that. So I just have to be honest with you guys. It's been ups and downs. What I've been saying is I'm just taking it one day at a time. Literally just one day at a time. Like, what can I do today to move the needle forward? You know, even though I'm not hearing back from folks, even though, you know, maybe I'm being ghosted, it's like, what can I do today to just like move this needle forward? And the reason I could say, I say the layoffs are also heartbreaking is because in the search for a job, you know, this show is called Outside of Work. So really the intention is to talk about things outside of our workplace. It would be remiss to not also mention that you need a job in order to survive. Like that's just the society we're in, you know, until we can find a new system in which we don't have to work to be able to live and, you know, and we don't run on a monetary system. That is the reality of where we are. But the entire point of this show, obviously, is to be able to, yes, work, but then not let that become your entire identity. Not let that, you know, engulf your entire life, that you're missing out on, you know, family functions or, you know, just living your life on the day to day. And so realizing this, you know, going out and applying for jobs, it could be so demoralizing when you don't hear back. When you don't even get to, like, when you don't even get a response, you know what I mean? It's almost like you're just left on read if they even read it, with these new algorithms and how many people are now laid off and how many people are looking for jobs. It's like, am I even being seen? For me, I've had people refer me to jobs and I still haven't heard anything, still been ghosted. I finally, you know, after like 5-6 months, have been able to get interviews. And so it's just kind of like, mentally, you're trying to balance these two ideas of like, yes, you got laid off. No, it's not your fault. Yes, continue looking for work, even though it's really tough right now to even like get a response. It's absolutely insane. And I saw a LinkedIn user, I'm gonna share this post that she wrote. So she wrote in this post, it has been a rough 9 months of unemployment. The unemployment checks have run dry and my patience is getting there too. The job market right now is bad. I know so many talented individuals in all different fields who are in the same boat that I am. I've gotten phone screeners, first interviews, second interviews, but mostly I've been ghosted. The worst part of this job hunt is the lack of transparency and communication. It's okay to send a rejection letter. I can take it. I'm a big girl. What I'm having trouble with is just radio silence. I can only send so many thank you for the interview or following up on your timeline emails after speaking with the job. And she ended it by saying, shamelessly posting this very Facebook-esque status on LinkedIn in hopes of getting traffic to my profile, because that's where we're at right now. I can totally relate to what she's talking about. The amount of jobs I've literally... She's luckier than me. She's gotten to first, second interviews. I mean, that's amazing. I've barely gotten to first interviews. But this idea that there's zero communication. Nobody's saying where you're at in the process. Even in the past, I remember like someone would email and then I'll be able to email them back saying, hey, just even if it's a rejection, I'll say, hey, what was it? What qualities could I, you know, have improved on during the interview? Where did I like stumble up? What kind of candidate are you looking for? You can ask these follow-up questions, but nowadays it just kind of seems like we're in a black hole in a way. I don't know if anyone else who's, you know, been looking for a job can relate, but you're just kind of in a black hole. It's so odd. And it just makes you feel like, am I going crazy? Like, I've applied to over 40 jobs and like nothing, not a peep. It's insane. And so, you know, you without a job and spending all these months, you don't realize how quickly these months go by. When you're working, bruh, time be crawling. You're just like, is it 5 o'clock yet? Is it time to clock out yet? But when you don't, the days just roll on by and you're like, oh my gosh, chill out. I need to figure out a life plan so that I can like get everything situated. And this user on LinkedIn, she'd be looking for 9 months. And guess what? Unemployment benefits don't last forever. I can't remember the exact cutoff time, but at a certain point, it's like the government cuts you off. Like, where's your job? I mean, luckily, it's only myself, my boyfriend, and our cat. But can you imagine if I had kids? Can you imagine if I had like a family to support? You know, luckily, my family can support themselves. But oh my gosh, there are people who are in this position who they have no other option. And so it's a very stark job market that we're in right now. And like, I know I'm laughing, but I laughed so that I don't cry sometimes. It's real. It's real. And it has lasting ramifications. The other day I stumbled upon an article that said, almost 1 in 4 millennials and Gen Zers, that's 25%, y'all, say they won't have kids due to finances. Now, we already knew that the younger generation really wasn't popping out babies like that. It's just different nowadays. You know what I mean? With women getting more rights, being able to make their own money, therefore, you know, pushing off kind of like the household responsibility or like the trad wife kind of ways that we used to be in. And, you know, women coming up in education and everything like that. Society changing, you know, the mentality of what can and cannot be done. And so you have more people in the workplace, especially women, and more money coming in and being generated. But also at the same time, especially in recent years with inflation and everything, prices are astronomical. Astronomical. Andre and I have been trying to look into when would be the right time to buy a house. At this point, I'm thinking never, really, because these prices, they just keep going up and up and up and up to a point where what used to be so much easier for the older generation to get, like buy a house or even pay for, you know, their school loans, it's become almost impossible for some of us. Some people are even wondering whether or not they want to go to college. That's just how high it is. I believe at some universities, the annual price is reaching 90,000. What? For 1 year? So it's no wonder this article is saying 1 in 4 millennials and Gen Zers say they won't have kids due to finances. And then a bit more on the article that I found really interesting. Almost a quarter of millennials and Gen Z adults without children say they plan to stay that way. The reason? Money. About 23% of these adults, ranging from 18 to 43 years old, said their financial motivation to remain childless boils down to two issues: valuing the financial freedom that comes from not having kids, as well as concerns about their ability to foot the bill for raising children, according to a new survey from Mass Mutual. The findings come as the annual U.S. birth rate has slowed to a record low. It seems like a lot of countries, sidebar, have been dipping on childbirth rates. So I wonder if this is a phenomenon that's kind of more global. I didn't look into that, though, so don't quote me. Where was I? The findings come as the annual U.S. birth rate has slowed to a record low. Other research also points to how financial factors are influencing the decision to start a family. In a July survey, Pew found that Americans under 50 without children said they opted against kids for both lifestyle and financial reasons, such as wanting to save for the future or having more time for hobbies and interests. People are saying, listen, kids are cute or whatever, but I have a fun lifestyle without them, which is fine, you know, to each their own. Some people, like my mom, would say, you're going to regret that later in life when you have no one to take care of you and you're over here in these grimy senior living homes being taken care of by nurses and, you know, not family. That's another take, you know, to each their own. I think both lifestyles, if they suit you, suit you. And the article continues, and to be sure, it's increasingly expensive to raise a child. This is the part right here. Listen, you guys, with one study finding parents typically spend about $240,000. That's almost $250,000 on each kid from birth to age 18. That's a 20% increase from 2016. This is what I'm saying, you guys. Like, even to raise children is becoming more expensive. That's why they're like, are you freaking kidding me? I could barely survive, you know, taking care of myself. But then add a kid on there, then add another kid on there. Two kids, that's $500,000 right there. This is insane. But let me chill out. That boiled my blood, because it's just like, especially millennials and Gen Zers. I always say, like, to my friend, I'm like, why is it that every single time we get to these key moments in our life, you know, going to college, graduating, actually getting into the workplace, every single time we get there, something is crumbling. In college, we leave, and now all of a sudden they have these brand new built-in studios and all this technology that we never got to have. We get into the workplace and it's crumbling. The institutions that we once knew are like falling by the wayside, and it's like, oh my gosh, can we not ever be stable? The housing market, we can't even afford a house. Shoot, we can't even afford rent right now. It is so insane. I feel like I've been yelling. I am so sorry. Let me tone it down. But oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Next. Like I said, taking it one day at a time. Taking it one day at a time. Otherwise, I will absolutely lose my mind, as well as you. And then some other tips that I've kind of written down to help you guys get through this madness is self-compassion. First and foremost, you have to be kind to yourself. Like, remember, you're not alone, and being laid off doesn't define your worth or capabilities. Speak to yourself the way you want, the way you would to a friend in the same situation. I've literally had to remind myself this so much. I'm such a perfectionist that sometimes if I don't do something right or things don't go the way that I want them to, I start blaming myself. I'm like, you're the problem, you know, you need to do better next time. Basically, just like kind of self-flagellation, which is, it's never helpful. If anything, just, you know, demoralizes you even more. So that's number one I would tell y'all. Just be kind to yourself. It could be so hard. You can't blame yourself for what has happened, even though it does feel personal. And just, yeah, you just need to be so kind to yourself. It's a tough time. It's very tough. Something huge that's been helping me get through this is my support system, my friends, my family, Andre. It's just, you need those people when you're not able to be kind to yourself to be kind to you and to remind you of your worth. I've had so many conversations with my friends just about, like, for example, I've been trying to figure out, television is everything that I've ever known. News is everything that I've ever known. I've never really tried any other industries. I've never done any other type of work except for this. You know, besides like in college when I was like an RA or a desk assistant or like worked at a nursing home. That's not really what I mean. Like as a profession, this is all I know. And so it's giving me a chance to kind of step back and think, do I want to try something different? But what would that be? what would that be? Do I have transferable skills that can, you know, go to a different line of work? And then there's this nagging voice in the back of my head that also asks, if you leave television, did you fail? If you leave network news, are you a real journalist? Will everything that you've worked for basically been for nothing? And that's an honest conversation I've been having with myself and with some friends. I know when I was in college and, you know, my friends and I were getting into the industry, all we thought about was getting into the big three networks. It's like, I'm not going local. I'm not really trying to work, you know, crazy hours and for little pay, like that's not happening. But also, why was it that like the networks were the end all be all? Where now in this new landscape that we have with digital and streaming and everything, network news is kind of taking a back seat. They're kind of fumbling. I mean, with the layoffs, that's how you can tell. They don't really know where to go from here, how the old model can now fit in a new world. And so for me, I'm like, okay, this old model is having a hard time fitting into the new world. So why do I still have this mentality that I need to fit into the old model? It goes back into what I was talking about when, you know, whenever my friends and I or our generations get to these pivotal moments, things just crumble or things change or whatnot. And so this is one of those where I've talked to people who have been in this industry longer than I've been alive and who talk about the good old days and all the money they had to be able to travel and talk to, you know, all these world leaders and, you know, cover these stories and have five crews at a site. And meanwhile, I could barely get one. And so it makes you think, like, if that world is changing, then why can't my mentality change too? Why is this the end all be all? That's where I'm at. That's what I'm trying to kind of reckon with. Your support system will really remind you of your worth, that you don't have to take the first opportunity that's available to you, that you can take your time in trying to figure some things out. And that you don't have to put yourself in these boxes that for some reason you think that you should be in. So my support system has been huge. It's still been really hard. I gotta tell you, there's been some days where by 5 p.m. I'm like, yeah, it's time to wind down. It's the day's over. And then I hop onto a conversation with a friend and I'm like, okay, things will be okay. Things will be okay. When I have those days where, you know, things just kind of end at 5 p.m., I've set something in place to make sure that I at least achieve something each day. So what I mean by that is that I set small, achievable goals. That can be, all right, today we're going to apply to 2 jobs. If I can do that in one day, I'm golden. I'm golden. What I used to do, and maybe some of y'all can relate to this, is I used to make these massive to-do lists all in one day because I'm superwoman and I'm going to finish all these tasks and everything's going to be checked off. You know, I'm going to get that dopamine from checking everything off. No, I found that when you're in a rut, when you're feeling a bit depressed and you're just like, oh gosh, what is even the purpose of this? You need to set small, achievable goals in order to keep moving forward, in order to keep, you know, moving that inch. And so that's what I've been doing for myself. Like today we're recording this episode. If I could record this episode, it is a win. Okay. That's my creativity. And then maybe I'll apply to one job. Another thing can be today I will update my website. I will update my about me. I will post more pictures on my social or, you know, on my website. Today I will work out legs, just legs, you know? So get at least 2 to 3 strong goals that you want to achieve every single day to make it seem worthwhile. Well, because it is worthwhile, but, you know, just to keep moving forward. You know that feeling when you tick off that to-do list check mark? You're like, boop, did that. That dopamine is so good. It is such a rush. And so the next tip is to literally just celebrate the small wins. Celebrate the small win of just getting up and going to the gym. That's amazing. That's your health right there. Booking that therapist appointment. That's huge for some people. Maybe like me, you finally got an interview. Maybe you met someone, you know, you met a new connection, or maybe you completed a course. I went to college with this woman who is always upping her tech courses. Like, I think she just finished an AI course or something like that. But like, she has these courses that she just like takes. They're not even that long. At least I don't think they're that long. Then again, I never asked. But it's the idea that she's always educating herself that is a win for her. So maybe that's something that you take on. After I achieve all my small goals, I tick off my to-do list for the day. I like to do fun stuff to get away from, you know, feeling so depressed all day. I like to do fun stuff. Andre and I have been getting into pickleball. I know we are so late. We're like 4 years late, but it is so flippin' fun, you guys. When we were in Paris, Katora's boyfriend, Kashan, told us about how he's ranked whatever, I forget now, in pickleball, and that he's really good, this, that, and the third. And the male ego in Andre's mind was like, bet I could do better. Got you. Challenge accepted. And so when we got back, he literally bought pickleball paddles, balls. Later on, he just kept adding stuff like court shoes. We got different paddles. I'm pretty sure he's on his third paddle now. And it's only been like a month in. But I was like, all right, let's do it. I'll try it. The reason I don't like playing games of any sort besides like solo games by myself are because I'm a sore loser. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I hate losing. I hate looking like a fool. It's so stupid because games are just meant to be fun, but I'm just so competitive and a perfectionist. I'm like, no, if I'm playing, I have to win. If I don't win, flipping this table over. And it can't be like that. So I was like, you know what? But let's do this. This will be a way for us to connect, a way for us to be out of the house, and I could work on my anger issues when it comes to losing. Bet. Boom, boom, boom. And so we started playing. There's like, we didn't even realize there's a local pickleball courts around the corner from our place where all these people come and they just play games. You know, you put your paddle up, you wait for your turn, and you just go in. For those of you who have played pickleball, you understand that it's a majority older clientele, older folk. usually when Andre and I are on the court, we are the youngest people and we're 30. Sometimes there'll be like, you know, maybe one or two other people who are younger than us, but mainly we are playing against some older folk. But what I learned is that their age is deception. These old people's age is deception. They are strong and fast as hell. What? We got pickled 3 times, 4 times already. And getting pickled means basically losing 0-11. I said is 11. 11, you go up to 11 points. And so we lost 0-11 to these old folk. Andre and I literally looked at each other like, they can't be for real. These people are out here lying. They're not weak and frail. They're strong and fast. And they're on the pickleball courts. And so we've slowly been getting better. We've taken some lessons. You know, there's been a really chill dude who at the pickleball court that we always go to who has been giving us, like, you know, some tutorials as well. And he's a brother and he's like, I can't be having my people out here embarrassing me. At least know the basics. That goes to show how good Andre and I are, which is not at all. But if anything, it's just for the fun of it. It is so fun. I totally get why y'all are into this game. And it's a small, for those of you who don't know pickleball, which I don't know why by now, but it is it's the quarter the size of a tennis court. There are like 4 quadrants and then a big rectangle in the middle called the kitchen. And you could play singles, you could play doubles. And so the reason why a lot of older folk kind of play it is because it's not as much like cardio movement, you know, going back and forth. It's more like strategy, like where you place the ball, how you hit it, your reflexes, you know. It's very much a game of strategy, I think. Learning your opponent's patterns and, you know, how to find those openings. It's very interesting. I never played sports where I had to use something. Like, I did track and field, so I used my body. I had my feet, and that's it. You know? I never threw, so I never did javelin or shot put or anything like that. So I've never done I played basketball. I love playing basketball. But it's different from, like, a racket sport where you have to, like, have hand-eye coordination and the way that, like, you hold it. It, you know, matters as well. My backhand sucks ass, but so I'm working on that. And so that element of it is like working my brain in a different way that I never even knew. I have to train myself to be like, okay, make sure you're holding the racket, you know, it's facing the direction that you want the ball to go into. Sometimes you don't need to use a lot of force when it comes to pickleball. You just gotta, you know, tap it or dink it, as they say. I'm just learning so much. It is so fun. After, you know, a day of maybe applying or updating my website or editing a podcast, I'm obviously editing this one and editing a different one. After a day of that, I'm like, let's go. It is pickleball time. And so, warning to Kishan, we're coming for you, just so you know. Another fun activity that I like to do, especially in the evenings when I'm winding down from the day. Winding down from what? Unemployment? Whatever. No, let me stop. Try that again. Another activity that I love to do, especially when I'm winding down for the day in the evening, is watch reality TV. Oh my gosh. The trashier, the better. I don't watch Love Island. I couldn't get into it. The production value is just very mediocre to me, but, you know, that's just me. I'll give it a try another time. I will. But my two favorite shows, reality shows to watch and binge, Too Hot to Handle and Love is Blind. So I recently just finished Too Hot to Handle like a couple of weeks ago. For those of you who don't know Too Hot to Handle, it is so stupid. Obviously, all these reality shows are stupid, highly produced, just all the things. We all know this. But I don't care. I watch it because I'm turning my brain off. I watch it because I'm looking for entertainment. And we all know it's not true. So just enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, don't be a snob. And so Too Hot to Handle is dumb as fuck. So the premise of the show is that there are these contestants. I forget how many there are. Like 12? Like 6 boys, 6 girls, something like that. And they all live in this villa. They're all hot as all hell. And they're all from all over the world. And the premise is they cannot have sexy time. They cannot kiss. They cannot touch each other. They cannot, you know, use any type of anything to pleasure themselves, even self-gratification, for the entire stay of the retreat. And the whole premise is these hot people in the villa basically are superficial when they look for love and are dating. They're hot. They know it. They bounce around from partner to partner. And so this show is supposed to like reform them so that they, you know, find better ways of relate, you know, getting into relationships and relating with someone else. It's entertaining. And so, and then the big key to the show is the cone, Lana. And this cone is set up all over the villa, watching them, monitoring them. And at the end of whatever time the cone decides, it like pulls them into the cabana and tells them what they did wrong. So Lana is watching you. Okay. And then each season has a cash prize. It changes every year. I think this year it was 200. This year it was 200,000, I think. Yeah, this year was $200,000. Which is insane. Was it 200,000 or was it 100,000? Now I'm forgetting. I think it was 200,000. But each infraction costs a certain amount of money. So if a couple is found kissing or whatever, $6,000. If they're found like, you know, pleasuring each other themselves, $12,000, something like that. So you can imagine these sex crazy people, the money is just, it's gone. It's dwindling. Some seasons they've lost it. They've gone into the negatives. And there's always that one couple who literally just spends all the money. And it's like, oh, well, I don't know. I'm just over here trying to make connections. No, you can't keep your thing in your pants. It's so fun, you guys. So I watched this season. It was okay. The season was okay. I don't know. Maybe because usually in past seasons, they don't tell them that they're on the show Too Hot to Handle. They think that they're going on like Fuckboy Island or something like that. And then, you know, there's going to be smashing people, having a good time, getting drinks, being litty, being on TV. No. And then when they find out they're on Too Hot to Handle, they're like, oh man. Da-da-da-da. But this season they told them. So I don't know what that was all about. So it felt more performative. I mean, they're always all performative. This one was like blatant. It's like, really? You knew your storyline the entire time. It was okay. My other show is Love is Blind. And if y'all have been keeping up, recently was the new season Love is Blind UK, which I'm really surprised that they haven't been to the UK already. They've been to Japan, Sweden, Brazil, all these places. Japan was the one that I was like, how is that going to work with this polite culture? And it was not my favorite season. This UK season, Love is Blind UK season, so good. Oh, it was so good. It had the drama. It had the villains. It had the people out here looking for money and fame. It was so good. My favorite character was Freddy. That's how Kat, that's how his partner Kat said his name. Freddy, he is, this man missed his calling to be a male model because he's over here being a funeral director. And I was telling my friend, I was like, shoot, that wouldn't be too bad to see during a funeral. Your hardest time, you just see this hunk. You could just, you know, lean your head on and cry. So that's Freddy. He was so sweet. Okay, but he wasn't just hot. He was like so sweet, so humble, so understanding. He's a family guy. Like, he takes care of his family. He has a brother with autism who he helps his parents out with. And there was a point where, like, oh, spoiler alert. I don't know if y'all watched this or whatnot. Sorry. So Freddy, his partner is Kat. And during the show, one of the arguments they have is when he says that if anything were to happen to him, he would want all his assets to go to his sister. And, you know, they call it a prenup, but I'm pretty sure he meant to say a will. I don't know why they kept mixing that up. Anyway, and since his brother has autism and he's taking care of him, you know, helping out the family, obviously if something were to happen to him, he'd want all those assets to then go to his sister, who would then, you know, continue taking care of his brother. And Kat was like, what? So just F me and our future kids and everything like that. Da, 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 da. Didn't even, you know, bother having an actual adult conversation about it. That's when I knew. I was like, this ain't working. And I think that's the moment where the relationship was donezo, bro. But I love watching Freddie. I don't understand how this man is still single. He is in his 30s, 6 feet, beautiful eyes, beautiful face, beautiful body, kind, beautiful spirit, so loyal to his family and whoever his future partner will be. And so it's just kind of like, dang, bro, maybe, hey, listen, it's reality TV. Maybe that's what he's been portraying. But after watching some other interviews he's been in, kind of seems like that's him. So Freddie, my favorite. If you get a chance, watch Love is Blind UK so I can have someone else to talk about it with. It is so, so good. And then the DC Love is Blind is coming out, I think September 13th, something like that, in a couple days. So I will be binging that. Love is Blind. If you don't have any trash TV to watch, watch that. If not, get some trash TV in your life. Get something that just lets you put the worries away and worry about some other people's drama for once, because it is so fun. Then, of course, the other thing that's been keeping me just so happy and, you know, filled with fun is having a creative outlet through this podcast and another podcast that I edit and produce. It's been so liberating to just have an idea. Think of a plan to, like, you know, I think it would work well this way, and then execute it and then put it out there. That is so fun without having, you know, someone tell you, no, let's not do that, or legal will have a problem with that. Just being able to just be creative and as free and liberated as I can be has been a total game changer. I forgot how creative I could be. I forgot how many ideas I have. I'm being forced to, you know, become my own manager and prioritize my own time because I've made a commitment to myself creatively. I have guests lined up for the next like month, but for this week specifically, I didn't have anybody. And so I was put into a position where I had to think, okay, you have no guests. How can you continue having an episode and continue, you know, telling the message that you've been saying? And so I was like, hey, let's just do a solo episode. There's nothing wrong with that. Let me talk one-to-one with people. And so it's gotten me into a different frame of thinking. It's challenging my brain to come up with problem-solving solutions, be even more creative than I've ever been, and to just, you know, try some things that maybe I haven't ever tried before. And I'm finally putting systems in place so that it could be more automated and not as stressful on myself. That's the one thing that I've started to learn, is that once you have systems in place, like, okay, we're going to record every week on this date. We're going to edit every week on this date. We're going to post by this time. Let me schedule, you know, Instagram posts so that, you know, for the next week or the next month, so that I don't have to think about it. It's these different systems that you put in place that just make your life so much easier. You continue to fulfill your obligation to yourself. And it's like using AI for the better. People are so worried about AI taking over, but it's like we've been using AI forever, like since the 60s and 70s, to automate things, to make things easier for us. So I don't think AI is going to be taking over the world anytime soon, honestly. I just don't think it's there yet. But I'm utilizing it now to my advantage to continue putting out great content and being creative. Even if I only get 2 viewers or, you know, 1 person comments or, you know, whatever, this has been so life-changing in that I get to be as creative as I want to be. I get to be me, which is something I haven't even thought about for the longest time. This podcast, show, whatever you want to call it, has brought me so much joy because I get to be me. I get to try out new things. And with that being said, you guys have brought me so much joy commenting, liking, you know, just interacting with me. It's been so cool to see how many people can relate to what I've been talking about, what my guests and I have been talking about, and also, you know, kind of giving us their own perspective on things. I want to read some comments from some folks. They're from YouTube. There have been some real day ones, like at Nia Talk. Shout out Nia, who has been literally watching since the first episode. She said, I love this and I hope your channel blows up. You're too sweet, Nia. Nia has a YouTube channel herself called Nia Talk. N-I-A Talk. So go follow her because she's a real day one as well. Another comment from CityGirl0105. You are a child of the Most High, first and foremost. I got laid off too. My value lies in the King, not the labels of this world. Bless you. I appreciate that. You know, even for people who might not relate with the Christian perspective of that or the faith perspective of that, you kind of have to believe that your value does not lie in the material world that we live in. You know, your value does not lie in your job. Your value does not lie in just being like, you know, a parent. It does not lie in just anything. You are you and you get to define that. So I love that so much. Thank you, CityGirl0105. Another one. A woman who could highly relate to me, but also kind of live life a bit differently. This is from Miriam K. Mote. Your work ethic reminds me of my younger self as a broadcast journalist and content producer. You must be a Capricorn. I'm not. I'm a Cancer. With me, though, I always separated me and my job. I knew and taught people that I'm not my job or my job doesn't define me. When I resigned, people were shocked that I left such a big media house. But I taught them that my success is not linked or depend on any building, company, or brand. Thanks for sharing. Yo, Miriam, you're a badass. I love that. I'm curious where you got that from, you know, before you even entered the workforce, because I can only speak to myself. When I entered the workforce, I'm like, oh, this is going to be my one and only. Like, work is my life. Like, these two are melded together. I am my job. My job is me. But for you, you're saying, I always separated me in my job. And you taught people that too. You taught people like, no boo. I am Miriam. Okay. I love that. That's really good. And they were shocked that I left such a big media house. You knew your worth, you knew your value. And you said, I'm out. I've had my fill and I'm out. If only all of us can, you know, take that perspective as well. Somebody gave, oh my gosh, this one was really interesting. Someone gave an example of what other professions have to go through. I think in my first episode, I was talking about how we judge people based on the types of jobs that they do. You know, like we say one thing for a doctor, like, oh, wow, you're a doctor. And then a janitor, we're like, oh, okay. But, and so this woman came in defense of doctors and also kind of shed light on what they go through, which is bananas crazy. This is, I cannot pronounce this, Natalia, the 5119. Okay. In doctor's defense, why they deserve a bit extra respect in my book. Of course, no one said they didn't. Med school is brutal, especially if you have financial and other obligations. To me personally, it means the person most likely went through some rough times and those might have been lengthy. My husband was in med school and then got selected into highly competitive CRNA program. Let me tell you, I'm tired. I have been busting my ass for over 5 years to provide. I am exhausted. He is too, obviously. Most of his original class fell out. Most of them have had several mental breakdowns. Some went into 100K or over that in debt and dropped out. Some, of course, are children of doctors and they have a significantly easier in financial sense. But I'd never do that shit. I have no skin, no patience for med school. Yo, I totally felt that though, girl. I totally felt, oh, let me not say girl, person, Natalie. Oh my gosh, that is so true. When you think about it, like these people are going into med school thinking, I'm going to help people out, you know, I'm going to come into this world and make a change. And then they actually go through med school, which in the United States is bonkers expensive. And we need doctors. There's a shortage of nurses and doctors. And they realize how grueling it is. You barely make any money while doing it because you're a student and, like, you know, in your practice at the same time. And just the hours that they have to put in to become a doctor are insane. And so this user is saying, for the past 5 years, I've been having to provide. I'm exhausted. We don't realize what maybe us pursuing our dreams, our dream job, quote unquote, how that affects other people around us, like our family, our partners. Because we're not the only ones sacrificing, right? The doctor, this husband's probably putting his head down like, man, I want to help people. I want to make a good life for my family. Da, 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 da. Meanwhile, his partner is over here like, I'm tired. I'm taking care of this. I'm taking care of that. I'm working. I'm hustling. So it's a real reality. That was a really great perspective. Thank you for that, Natalie, 5119. I appreciate it. And then I love this. So people gave me some advice. I don't know if I'll take it, but hey, maybe it'll be useful for you. Maybe you'll get something out of this. At BDukes8075 said, take a look at course careers and tech sales. It will take some work, but you can get a remote job making 60 to 80K a year to start. Y'all, don't tell me to do tech. I could barely do 2 + 2. Like, ain't no way I'm gonna understand tech or binaries or anything. It's not happening. I need something that I can condense information and put it out in a simple way. I can talk to people and put it out in a certain way. Like, I can't. I wish. Oh, man, I wish. But I just, it's too much. It's too much. And then the next person at HowieG2019 said, two moves you should make. One, get your CDL. Until automation kicks in, a massive demand exists, and some of those jobs are seasonal, giving you time to rest and get away from your coworkers. CDL, I had to look that up. That's a commercial driver's license. I'm sorry. I already suck at driving as it is. Like, okay, I don't suck. I think I'm an okay driver, but everyone else who gets into my car is, like, surprised they're still alive for some reason. And so the fact that people barely want to get into a regular car with me, you want me to handle a 16-wheeler? Ain't no way, bruh. Ain't no way. Maybe that works with some of y'all. I think I have a former childhood friend. She is a truck driver, which is a badass. Thank God for truck drivers. Because that's our supply chain right there. Like, without them, we would not have a lot of things that we have. But speaking personally, I could never do that job. It's not happening. Okay, number two. With your next job, take 5 to 15% of each paycheck towards trying, failing, learning, and trying again of various things. Because with automation coming in, I think we all need to figure out other ways of doing things. I love that. I love that. That goes back to my other two points. One, try other fields. Think about something that you don't usually do or have never done before. Me, let's look at somewhere else besides television. Maybe look at agencies. Maybe look at, I don't know, helping people in human resources or something. I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know why I said that. But basically just like look somewhere else. And number two, about the woman who I went to college with who's always taking courses. She's always educating herself. She just finished an AI course. Insane. And so I think it is so smart. This YouTube user is basically saying invest in knowledge and invest in education. It doesn't have to be formal education. It could be taking a course. It could be, you know, whatever, going to some networking functions. Do something to educate yourself. Because in that, you give yourself options. You give yourself hope. That if this one path doesn't work, then surely another path will. I'm such a dork. I just finished this episode of My Hero Academia. It's an anime for those of you who watch that. The bad guy in the show has this perfect quote. He says, oh, I have more than one path to my goal. And the image kind of showed like a network of webs. And it showed like, you know, one kind of going this way and then it dies. But the entire web is still intact, meaning that I don't just have one way to a goal, one way to success, whatever that looks like to you. Have multiple plans so that if one fails, don't worry about that. Got another in the chamber right here. That's not going to hurt me at all. You know, you break my leg. Hey, I got this cane right here. Let's keep it going. You feel down, do something to that helps you pick you back up. In this world where it might seem hopeless, where you might seem like, what the heck is going on? If you're in my place, you know, laid off for 5-6 months, still trying to figure it out and doing things in the interim, you know, to keep things going, we have to understand that we are in control. There is hope. We just have to bring that, you know, to ourselves. Or if we can't bring it to ourselves, have that support system that can help us along the way. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode. I appreciate every single one of you for taking the time out of your day, even just to listen. I so appreciate it. I want us to continue these conversations. Send in any questions you have. Send over those comments, anything. I love having these conversations because we only grow when we actually talk to each other and we talk about the untalked about things. All right, till next time, I'll see you guys later. Hey there, one more thing before you go. First, thank you so much for watching and listening. You didn't have to. You could have done literally anything else with your time. So I am so appreciative. Number two, if you liked what you heard or you resonated with anything, please like, comment, subscribe. Do all the things. All the links will be in the show notes so we can continue exploring this wild, weird, wacky, and awesomely wonderful world outside of work. Friday.